Hello and welcome to the Chris Allen podcast, brought to you in association with Wolverhampton's local radio station, WCRFM. You can hear WCRFM on 101.8 or via WCRFM.com or by telling your smart speaker to play WCRFM. In this week's podcast, we're going to be hearing from Martin Gomberg of Interfaith Wolverhampton as he reflects on Holocaust Remembrance Day. Also, Councillor Steve Evans will be talking about the new addition to the electric fleet here in Wolverhampton, going along the carbon neutral road. Councillor Linda Leach, the Cabinet Member for Adult Services and Bilston North Councillor, will be talking about some of the support for some of the most vulnerable people across the city. And the two councillors also will be telling us about the Prouds Lane development. We'll also be hearing from Alex Spencer from The Haven Refuge as they seek to collect 50 stories and have also got lots of fundraising in their 50th year. First of all, though, here's Martin Gomberg of Interfaith Wolverhampton telling us how Wolverhampton marked Holocaust Remembrance Day.
Well, we had, as we've done for a number of years now, Interfaith Wolverhampton works with the City Council, their Equalities and Diversity and Inclusion team work with us, and they organise, because it's a civic event, they organise the great and good, so the mayor, the lieutenant, leader of the council, leader of the opposition, and other representatives of the community. They get all of that sorted out, and we ensure that there's a degree of diversity in the speakers. We've always designed the event so that we get about half a dozen people reading small, short extracts on the theme of each year to show, first of all, to talk about what Holocaust Memorial Day is about, but also to demonstrate the wonderful diversity, the great asset we have here in the city of Wolverhampton, that we have such a diverse community, but also a diverse community that really is together and comes together for events like this.
Now, the Holocaust is remembered in different countries at different times of the year. Tell us where Holocaust Remembrance Day came from.
So at the 75th anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz was in the year 2000. There was a thing called the Stockholm Accord. And this was a declaration that governments across the world were encouraged to sign up to. And it's a declaration to two things, really. One is to not forget, and the second is to educate and learn for the future. So one is looking backwards at what's happened. And it's not just the Holocaust from 1940s and the Second World War, but unfortunately there have been acts of genocide since then, and they're included in this commemoration. That was in the year 2000. And then in the UK, the Holocaust Memorial Trust was set up, which is an educational charity. It puts together a program each year for with different themes, and civic authorities, like here in Wolverhampton, sign up to organising and supporting an event each year.
And those two aspects there, one about remembering and one about learning, are the two pivotal moments. You know, obviously, we won't discuss this, and I mention it in passing, there's still people who deny it ever happened, and yes, and therefore looking back is important because of that and the facts of history that are there. But learning and broadening out to the other genocides, which in a city like Wolverhampton, it's so diverse, is really important to grasp and to see.
It is, and also it's what is nice to see is that the materials that are provided are being picked up by local schools. So many of the schools in Wolverhampton will have had local displays or events or presentations at assemblies and so on. And this year the theme was ordinary people. And the idea there was that, which I think was something that the kids could understand, is that genocide, from the perpetrators through to the victims, and including those who were helping to save people and those who stood by and did nothing, but they were all ordinary people. And the stories that emerge is it's very challenging stories, because we have to think about, well, what would we have done? You know, these people were no no different. I mean, some of them were, but on the whole, it takes a lot of people to remain silent to actually facilitate these awful, awful events.
And you mentioned, you know, we mentioned there that this is not just for thinking back to the Holocaust, but other genocides as well. I just wonder what your thoughts have been as we hear what's come out of Ukraine, where there seems to be, again, evidence of people being taken away and being killed, and whether that brings back some echoes of all that you're trying to combat through keeping these thoughts and these memories and learning from them alive.
Well, yes, it is. It's extraordinary, isn't it? The degree to which people can be whipped up into doing things that are just unbelievable. But we have to not keep saying they're unbelievable. They happen.
Because they happen.
And and I think, of course, if you're in a war context, then clearly, you know, that's a difficult environment in which to talk about being reasonable, because wars are not fundamentally reasonable things. And I think we just have to keep remembering that this stuff happens, and we've got to keep trying to equip the next generation with a sense of reflection that might help them, if they're put in that sort of situation, to find a way to resist joining in.
And a part of that, what comes into my head sometimes, is actually the decision makers and then the doers, those who have to go out and do the evil because someone else has made a decision. And if you're caught up in that, again, it's very hard to separate out your feelings within such terrible situations.
It is. I mean, a lot of people do find ways of disconnecting from the sort of central government impetus, and it is possible to do that. Unfortunately, in the last decade, we've seen the way in which, particularly through social media, that somehow or other it's become so much easier for people to be persuaded of the most ludicrous new truths about other people.
Yeah.
And the degree of vitriol is just astounding.
And do you think, therefore, social media, because sometimes the other thing is it takes the lid off it, doesn't it? So therefore, yes, you find out things that you would not have known about. But you think perhaps on balance, the hatred that comes through is worse than the good it could do?
Well, I think the fact that we're seeing what's going on in Ukraine, for example, and that's all down to the power of social media, and that's a good thing because we're getting to see what's happening, and the information's coming out in a way that's more free than it would be otherwise. But on the other hand, in many different contexts, we are seeing this the hate. I think that's the simplest thing, the word you used, becoming a currency that's available to all to just go behave in a very unreasonable way. We're seeing it all over the place, whether it's from people in the media, you know, film stars or influencers and all the rest of it, that people are getting attacked for absolutely no reason at all.
And I think, you know, thinking back to the diversity of Wolverhampton brings into play really the importance of Interfaith Wolverhampton in terms of understanding so many different people from many different backgrounds coming together. And there's a history in Wolverhampton really of celebrating diversity. And you must feel, being on the board of Interfaith, that you're a heart of it, really.
Yeah, so that is a warming aspect of it all, and it's worth just remembering that Interfaith Wolverhampton grew out of another period of hate, which was when Enoch Powell in the 60s, mid-60s, gave his Rivers of Blood speech, and as a reaction against that, the communities, the various faith communities in Wolverhampton got together and organised with local politicians things like people going for a meal in a neighbour's house from a different culture and experiencing that actually, you know, these people are not different in any fundamental way. They just, you know, their food might look a little different. And a lot of barriers were broken down then. And so it took, unfortunately, it did take the nastiness of Enoch Powell's speech, but it did result in the formation of Interfaith Wolverhampton over the decades. And I think that having Interfaith Wolverhampton there is a sort of, it's a very small charity. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't have an enormous membership or anything, but it is a safe place for people to go to talk about stuff. And if there are issues, as has happened recently with the incidents in Leicester, there were conversations held here in Wolverhampton with Interfaith Wolverhampton helping to support the dialogue, just to make sure that people were talking to one another, because that's, you know, that's the trick, that's the key, is just to get people to talk.
That's Martin Gomberg of Interfaith Wolverhampton. Councillor Steve Evans is the Cabinet Member for the Environment and Climate Change, and Wolverhampton have now added to their electric fleet, and I put it to him that they've taken another step along the carbon neutral road.
It is, and as we said before, we want to be carbon neutral by 2028. And we got some 400 vehicles in operation for the council services. Things like street sweepers or, you know, the bin collection wagons and other vans. So, yeah, we're busy trying to slowly but surely replace our fleet. Of course, it costs money and they're not always readily available because of the microchip shortage. But I'm pleased to say we got four brand new battery electric vehicle sweepers.
Right. And that investment, will that, do you get a return on that investment long term? Obviously, you're doing it because of the environment, but do you get a return on that investment too, so it makes good business sense?
It does. We get a double win, really, because everybody knows that fuel's really expensive and these are diesel vehicles that we currently have in service. So every time we replace a petrol or diesel vehicle with a battery electric vehicle one, yes, it's good for the environment, but it actually saves us a lot of money on fuel costs as well. So it's almost cost neutral and it benefits the climate.
And do you think people are beginning to pick up now that you can do little things yourselves, as, you know, as a council, as individuals, in order to impact on the environment positively? Whereas once upon a time we said, oh, well, if you don't get the big country sorted out, we'll never get anywhere.
I do. I think people take it a lot more seriously. And I've always said, you know, a few years ago, I always pictured somebody in a woolly jumper and a beard who was trying to save the planet. I think things have changed and people do their little bit. They do recycle now. You know, they do think about the environment and how they're going to travel. So, yeah, we know we can't single-handedly change the world, but we can make a little bit of a difference, can't we?
And I've not managed to get along to a tiny forest yet, but they're getting little ideas that make a big difference, aren't they?
They are, and they're fantastic for younger people, because we always get the schools involved. So they learn about the planet, they learn about the plants. And actually, there's a lot of biodiversity and you get all the insects.
Yeah.
So not only is it good for the area, it's good for the children and learning and their awareness.
And then we learn from them.
We do. They always teach us a lot. And we know things like Rex Rovers. This is a big, if you like, outfit we bought. And it's a big dog that we use to go around the schools to help promote recycling.
Yeah.
So we got a book called Recycling Rovers, and we got this big dog, and the kids love him. But that draws the kids to the dog, but actually they get the learning about the recycling, and they go back home. What better way to get onto the parents than not the council, but the kids?
Yeah. But I was also thinking about worldwide, though, isn't it? It's young people who've got the passion for the planet, and some of us who are longer in the tooth are perhaps playing a bit of catch-up.
I think so.
Like, I'm speaking personally, not placing it on you.
No, I think you're right. Listen, 10, 15, 20, 30 years ago, if you'd have said something about the planet, we'd have thought, what they're on about now? Save the whales.
Yeah.
You know, that's what I used to see when I was growing up. And, you know, you'd see some guy like David Bellamy, like beard, woolly jumper.
Yeah.
I think we've moved on.
Yeah.
And lots of people of all ages know the difference it can make. and everybody tries to do their little bit.
Indeed. And now, one of the things, obviously, in the cost of living crisis, well, I say cost of living crisis, you know, to be honest, many of our citizens probably live in a cost of living crisis all their lives, never mind what's going on at the moment. But one of the issues, again, is people trying to, you know, getting tyres, cheap tyres, worn out tyres. There's a bit of a problem around us at the moment. You're a bit worried about people perhaps getting part worn tyres that actually are not safe for them.
Yeah, our trading standards team, obviously. You know, they do a lot of mystery shopping, if you want to call it that.
Yeah.
And they do a fantastic job, and it is important just to monitor places that sell tyres and make sure they're doing the job properly. And recently they visited 12 establishments.
Right.
And we found two of them were selling out-of-date tyres, tyres that weren't safe, that all still got nails in them.
Grief.
So, yeah, no, it's important. And you're right, look, tyres are expensive.
Yeah.
You know, they can cost, what, 70, 80, 100, £150.
Yeah.
You go to a little unit somewhere in the back streets off an estate and they say, yeah, we could do you one for a tenner, part worn. What are you going to do?
Yeah, but it's the whole thing. If it's too good to be true, it probably is.
and it was. And, you know, we're just trying to remind people that there's little things you can look out for, because legally there's got to be a minimum of 2 mil tread.
Yeah.
There should be a date on. That's a four-figure number. So, for example, if you saw a date that said 1320, so 1320, that would be 1st of March 2020.
Right.
And they really shouldn't be any older than a couple of years.
Right.
So, you know, there's little things you can do and look out for, but as much as it's tempting to save yourself a bit of cash, and we know how hard things are, listen, you can't put a price on the cost of life. No. And a part-worn tyre that's dangerous.
I always think, actually, the bit of the tyres, they're the bit that hits the road. You know, they're more important than anything in the whole of the car, really. It can break down. Yeah, but, you know, it's the
tyres most important thing, because yeah, if your tyre goes, your car's gone, yeah, and you with it, and maybe somebody else.
It strikes me, in your portfolio, you've got these two wings. One is actually, you know, like we're talking about the green issues of protecting the environment, enabling positive change as well. But also on the other side of it is combating, and we've talked before about, obviously, fly tipping as well, the negative side as well. So you have that real balance of pluses and minuses, don't you?
I do, and I'm often described as really evil, the evil Evans, and I don't think I am, in all honesty. Some might disagree, but I do think it's important that we uphold trading standards. I do think it's important we catch the fly tippers, and I do think it's important that we stop people from littering. So therefore, we do issue fines, rightly so. That's not the council trying to make money, because if people didn't do it, we don't make anything.
Mm.
And we've got shopper tipper. You know, somebody gives us information that leads to issuing a fixed penalty notice of £300. We'll gladly give them, you know, £100 worth of vouchers. Yeah, we've got to cover the costs of the staff. It's not making money for ourselves. And look, nobody likes to see mattresses and newspapers and bin bags dumped by where they live. And it ain't on. You could easily go to one of the two HWRCs. They're open 7 days a week. I just think some of these are rogue landlords,
mm-hmm,
that would have to pay for disposal because they're a business. You know, it's free for residents. There's no excuse for anybody dumping furniture, mattresses, bin bags. There really isn't. There's no excuse for littering. There's more than enough litter bins in the city centre, and it's just about getting people's behaviours correct.
And the great majority are fine. So the message, the great majority, is actually you see somebody breaking the law, shop them.
Well, that's right. And it is a minority. And why should they get away with things and spoil it for the majority? We want a nice area to live in, don't we? You know, we want the environment to be safe and clean. And we've got to think about our kids. You know, I can remember we run a campaign about dog mess. You know, all of a sudden we had a lot of dog walkers complaining, going, what's the matter with that Steve Evans? And he got nothing else better to do. So hang on a minute. There's kids that play on those absolutely green spaces.
Absolutely.
And it ain't fair that there's dog mess on there. So yeah, we did have a purge on them, rightly so in my opinion.
That's Councillor Steve Evans, who's the Cabinet Member for the Environment and Climate Change. Councillor Linda Leach is the Cabinet Member for Adult Services, and she's also a councillor in Bilston North.
I am indeed. Thank you very much. Nice to see you.
No, good to see you. Good to welcome you to our studio for the first time.
Yeah, you know? It's great. Very nice and cosy.
It's a bit posh around here, isn't it?
It is.
And now you've got a lot of lonely people in the community, a lot of people isolated. And tell us a little bit about the Bilston Memory Cafe. Could you have a free cup of tea there?
You can do. And if you come along to the next one, which is actually Valentine's Day, it is afternoon tea. So you'll have some cake, scones, nice drink. Yeah. So basically, it is one of my priorities in adults as a cabinet member, and we get to choose what we would like to concentrate on for the year to come. So one of it was the dementia cafes, because I'd started to get involved with the Alzheimer's group and couldn't believe how many people suffered with dementia. And it's not just an age thing, so I was quite surprised about how many young people actually suffered with it as well. And the pressure that he can put on the carer, which doesn't have to, you know, it could be just a member of the family that's looking after them, and the pressure that he put on family in general. So, you know, one of my friends' mum had dementia, and the change in her was just unbelievable. She went, she didn't recognise her mum anymore. Mum didn't recognise daughter. You know, it's just really heartbreaking. So
it's almost like you've lost the person, but they're still there in front of you, aren't they? Who they were went a long time ago. You know, I've got personal experience around this, and it is heartbreaking. So I can understand why it was a priority for you.
Yeah, well, it's a really dreadful disease, to be fair. And as I say, it doesn't just affect that person, it affects everyone. So I wanted to do a bit of training, and then I don't know, I went along to all the different Alzheimer groups in Wolverhampton. So I went to Al's CAF, which is a really famous CAF, wanted to see how they run it. Went along to the Grand, fantastic what they offer, absolutely out of this world. But unfortunately, we haven't all got the same money as the Grand.
Yeah.
So I wanted to open one up in Bilston. The adult team was behind me and fully supported me. So we get in touch with the Alzheimer's Society, who helped us, you know, tell me what I'd got to do to get this this cafe opened. So basically, I'd got to find the right people to run the cafe. So we've got a young family, well, I say a young family. We've got the Lions Group, they're called. So I approached them to see if they was interested, which they were. So it's Stuart and Sue Richman, who run the Dementia Club for me. And they've opened it up in the Bilston Sports and Social Club, which is on the Wellington Road in Bilston. So it's like on a good bus route. It's on the tram route. It's absolutely fantastic. So, yeah, so we've opened that up. They meet the second Tuesday of every month.
Mm-hmm.
And as I say, this Valentine's Day, we're going to have afternoon tea. It is pretty new. This will be only the third one that they've done. So it's getting the word out there for people to come along and just have some light relief.
And if you're a family member, if you're a carer, just knowing it's there as well. And I've noticed that people can book as well. We'll pop out the number for that, 07985 151162. I'll repeat that later in case people want to note that down. Get a pen and paper ready for later as well. But that's, and again, these memory cafes, and I've witnessed one actually whereby people get the chance just to talk through, because obviously with dementia, long-term memory is still in place quite often. It's the short-term memory that is the problem. But actually people giving the chance to explore, you know, their own personal history. It's great, isn't it? It brings them alive.
It is. And you know, like photographs, some people that suffer with dementia don't really recognise themselves when they look in a mirror, but they will recognise themselves years ago. So by having sometimes a photograph of them when they were young and a photograph of yourself, that the person who's caring, of when they're wrong, that they recognise each other then.
Right.
So it's just finding ways of talking to these people, engaging with them. Because they're so... I went on this dementia buzz where it just gives you a snapshot of how it feels to be suffering with dementia. I was on there for about 7 minutes. I came off, I was so emotional. it was just unbelievable.
So what did you do? How did people... I can't imagine how you could even recreate that.
Oh, it's
so
amazing.
What do they put you through?
So when I first went on the bus, I had to have these like sole things put in the shoes with got spikes on.
Right.
And I had to wear these great big thick gloves, so I couldn't really touch anything properly, pick up anything properly. And I had to have earphones on that was constantly having a car sirens through my ears and loud music and people shouting, and a pair of glasses that you only could see out of slightly little areas. And you went into this room, into this bus, and it was like pitch black, but lots of bright lights shining. And you got someone saying to you, Linda, set the table for four people. So I'm trying to set this table for four people, but with the gloves and everything and the glasses, I can't see and I can't feel for the plates. I'm putting the plates out and this man takes a plate off me. So I puts another one out and then he takes it off me again and he says, I've told you, you know, set a table for four. And I'm like, I have. And I'm going absolutely crazy.
I think I've had worse nightmares than actually, where you're describing it. But that shows that what a nightmare dementia is.
And your feet... I couldn't understand why they put these spikes in my feet. But if you look at people as they're not, I was just going to say get older, not necessarily, but they lean forward.
Yeah.
Well, they lean forward because their feet, they don't feel right.
Right.
And they shuffle. And I found myself shuffling. Oh, right. If anybody can have this experience, they need to, because I think then you would
understand.
You'll
never be the same again, are you?
So emotional.
Now, obviously, lots of vulnerable people across the city, and there's lots of warm spaces around as well now, aren't there? They seem to be growing. You can find out about them on the council website.
You will. We've got actually 38 warm spaces.
Oh, across, wow. That is growing,
Yeah. And this offers the residents an opportunity to meet people, to have a couple of hours of warmth, have a hot drink, to have some advice. There'll be people there to give them advice, free internet. And we also have a free shuttle bus that'll help people get there and back that can't really attend.
Right.
So with the... cost of living, you know, with the fuel going up, food prices going up, energy prices, I think the council recognised the struggle with families. Not necessarily families on benefits either. This is open for everybody. So, you know, no one has to feel proud. You know, you just come along, you'll be made welcome. And just, you know, as I say, have a nice warm drink and somewhere nice and warm to stay.
That's Councillor Linda Leach, the Cabinet Member for Adult Services. And while she was in the studio with Steve Evans, I got them to talk about the Prouds Lane development, which is moving ahead this week. First of all, I asked Linda to tell us a little bit about it.
I will do, yes. So basically, we've got these two big fields on Prouds Lane. Years and years ago, it was left to the community.
Yeah.
There was, the council did try to build some houses on that a few years ago, and the community got together and it was stopped. But since then, obviously, it's just been open fields. So I was having loads of problems with antisocial behaviour on the fields and dog mess.
I knew you were going to mention dogs.
Yeah, I know. And it's a shame because not every dog owner is the same. Most dog owners do pick up after themselves.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's just those certain few, that minority, that spoil it for everybody else.
Well, Steve was saying earlier when we were talking about, again, it's one of those things you have to tackle, because the amount of diseases that can pass on to children is, you know... isn't worth bearing in mind, isn't it, really? So it is something. So now, you moved it forward, you got money in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And now you put a shovel in the ground, or a spade.
Let's call a spade a spade,
shall we, yeah.
Yeah, and can I just say that I asked to be the first person to ever put that spade in after all the work and the years it's took us to get this over the line. It's finally happening. And then Councillor Evans takes a spade off me that was brought for me.
That's not quite true, Chris.
Yes.
Photo purposes only.
Okay.
I can assure you The person who put the foot on the spade was Councillor Linda Leach. Right, okay. Rightly so.
Right. And looking forward, you know, I know when I've been talking to the leader about the importance of green space around the city, these places for people to just go out and enjoy responsibly. What's your hope for these fields moving forward now?
Well, I hope with all the money that's going to be spent on it and how good it's going to be
and
developed.
And how much are we talking about? I know you've got to bring it to different places.
We're talking about $500,000 altogether.
Right, okay. Mm. Significant money.
Yeah, yeah. It's a combination of Section 106 monies that Councillor Leach got.
Yeah.
And then because things have moved on over the last couple of years with materials going up in cost, then that meant the project actually fell short of money or reduced the project,
right.
Which, of course, Councillor Leach didn't want to do. And she approached Public Health, and they've actually topped it back up again now. So the full project, as Councillor Leach wanted, can take place.
Yeah. Brilliant. And so what's it going to look like when it's all done?
So it's going to be absolutely fantastic. So we're going to have a hard surface around the perimeter of the field with all new fencing, which is one of the main things that the community wanted. We've got a full football pitch, which has already been there. However, we're changing it over to the other field for a full-size football pitch. We also have a five-a-side football pitch on the small one. We've got a new play area, which is designed for disabled children as well, which is absolutely fantastic, a nice soft play area. An outdoor gym for any age groups, obviously. And around the perimeter, it's going to be wide enough for wheelchair users, you know, and all that. There's going to be benches scattered around so people can, like, sit and have a rest.
Yeah. And chat together, can't they? You bring the community together.
Yeah.
Are you going to have, because on some benches nowadays, you put on a sign, say, if you sit on here, someone might come and talk to you, you know, be warned.
That sounds good.
There you go.
And I'll just think it's going to be great for the public to be able to get out and meet each other, because, as you say, we've got a lot of lonely people out there. I'm hoping that I can encourage people to come out and do that. There'll be enough space for people to meet, to have nice picnics in the nice weather.
Yeah.
And, I've got lots of ideas running around in my head that I can do to try to engage with the public to get them out to do it. But I just hope the more people that use it, the more people that can protect it.
Yeah.
Because obviously, you know, we always get that minority that's going to vandalise it, and we need to encourage. We're not saying that people can't go over and walk the dogs, but they need to pick up after
responsible.
Themselves.
They've got to be responsible.
They do.
And that ownership by the community, Steve, again, you'll see this in other parts of the city with your portfolio, that ownership by people, again, if they feel it belongs to them, they look after it, don't they?
I think they do. If they're part of it and it belongs to them, then of course you protect it.
Yeah.
And we've got something like 56 green space play areas across the city. And over the last 6 years, we've been upgrading all of them.
Right.
And we're up to like 40 now of the 56. And I'm really pleased with this project. I know it's one that Linda's been chasing for a number of years. And to have inclusive play areas, to have a football pitch, to have new tree planted, to have a hard space where you can walk around and have benches, to have all of those things in one area is superb, actually, because normally they're reserved for like the city centre spaces like West Park. So to have it in Bilston North Ward is actually a big milestone in itself. Because, you get the normal traditional play areas. Like I got one in Long Knowle by the school on the Long Knowle estate. But it's not to that value and effect. But this is a large piece of land that's largely been left to overgrow, and the railings are damaged and missing and so on. So to have it all upgraded, and I think the uses that for everyone that Councillor Leach has talked about means that people are likely to use it. And if you're likely to use it, you're likely to protect it more, aren't you?
You are.
She's dead right.
And what's the timing on it? When is it likely to be all open?
Hopefully by the summer.
Oh, right, OK. You're going to invite me along to open it?
Of course, if you want to.
Do a radio broadcast from there, you know?
If you want to come along and have a photo, you're more than welcome. But do not take the spade off Councillor Leach.
OK. Yeah. Or if you do, duck.
in case you get hit over the head with it.
Thank you both very much indeed.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
I'm not sure what I've let myself in for there. That's Councillor Linda Leach. Also, before that, you heard from Councillor Steve Evans. The Haven Refuge in Wolverhampton is celebrating its 50th year. Lots of stuff going on. Stuart Hickman caught up with Alex Spencer to find out all about it. First of all, though, he asked her what her role was in the organisation.
So I am the communications manager for The Haven. It's really my role to sort of make sure that everybody knows, well, what we do, what we offer in terms of our services. And part of that is really highlighting the fact that we don't just offer refuge accommodation. So we can support women and children in the community who are still living in their homes. We offer counselling, we offer financial support and advice, legal support and advice. And children's therapy as well. So, you know, we are a lot broader. Obviously, refuge is a big thing for us and it's needed. we do offer a wide range of services. And it's also my job to sort of make sure that people are aware of the signs of abuse as well. So we're doing a lot of that work like that on our social media because it can be hard to spot. People might not realise that they're in that kind of situation.
Okay, yeah. I can imagine that's quite true, actually. You probably don't realise that you are in that situation. So tell us about some of the signs that people can mm-hmm. look for.
Obviously, we've moved far away, thankfully, from the idea that abuse is just physical. Obviously, in a lot of circumstances, you might find physical abuse, but we're also looking at emotional, psychological, sexual abuse. And a lot at the moment, what's particularly prevalent is financial abuse, so really restricting access to money. And at the moment, with the financial crisis, people are struggling anyway. So if you've got someone who's struggling, and then there's also an abuser there, making sure that you have no access to funds, it's going to be near on impossible without support to leave. Obviously, that's where we come in, so please do call us if you need any support. Shouting, just making you feel like you're small and worthless. But ultimately, what I would say is, if you're ever unsure, if you think, well, I'm not sure whether this is abuse, but you feel like it might be, please do call us, because our helpline is open 24/7 and we can advise you. So you tell us the kind of things that you're experiencing and we can advise you on what to do next, you know, in terms of the next steps. So please don't hesitate to call us.
Yeah, so if you have that kind of good feeling that I don't think this is quite right here, there are people to help you with that.
Absolutely. Yes, please do call us. Like I say, even if you're not sure, that's what we're here for, really.
So Haven's been, 50 years now?
Yes.
Big anniversary this year.
It is.
How long have you been involved, Alexandra?
I haven't been involved for that long, actually. I've only been here about 6 months, so it's new to me, the Haven. However, I have worked on the front line before. I've worked as an outreach worker, so supporting victims of domestic abuse and people who've been subjected to domestic abuse, directly. That led me here, really. And it's just the most wonderful organisation, and every day I learn something new about the Haven that I think, wow, that's amazing. We give the children and the ladies, when they come into refuge, a new bedding set. So every single person gets a brand new bedding set, and the children get to choose their own, which is so lovely. So they get like a range of characters and stuff, and they get to choose their favourite one. Because obviously, you know, a lot of women and children who are coming to us are leaving with absolutely nothing, bar the clothes that they've got. So it's so important that we are able to create a home. Well, we try to create a home away from home as much as we possibly can in really difficult circumstances, of course. Just the work we do is incredible. I go into the refuges quite often and meet the ladies and the children, and they are just inspirational. What they've been through is just, and they just have, you know, smiles on their faces, and they are just the bravest, strongest people you'll ever meet. They're wonderful. So I'm very proud to work for the Haven, that's for sure.
Excellent. You just can't imagine being in that situation, can you? But obviously so many people are.
Yes.
What is your take on how we are with this now? Do you think that this is actually getting worse?
I think it's always been an issue, and I think it will be an issue for many years to come, unfortunately. And that's the thing. It was interesting because I was speaking to the daughter of one of the founders of the Haven, and she said that her late mother would be proud on the one hand of how far the Haven has come, how big we are and how much support we offer. On the other hand, devastated that we've had to get to this point and to be this big and to hire this many staff because there's so many women and children to support. And obviously we are marking the 50th year, but we tend to say we're not celebrating it because ultimately we don't want, it sounds crazy, but we don't want to do our jobs because we don't want to have to exist.
It'd be ideal if it disappeared really, wouldn't it? But that's not going to happen, is it?
No, it's not. And the thing is, I mean, it wasn't until the 70s that, you know, the term domestic violence was even used, but that doesn't mean that previous to the 70s, obviously it wasn't a thing. Of course it was. It was just that it's become, you know, it's people are talking about it more, which is obviously wonderful. But we have a lot of work to do. It's such a complex issue with so many layers. But without the help of, you know, the government and just everyone in society really kind of tackling it and standing up against it, it won't change. But it can if we work together. It's just getting to that point. I think we'll be a few years off, but I'm hopeful that we will get to a point at some point where we don't have to be as big as we are.
You mentioned going into the refuge and meeting some people who were truly inspirational to you. So tell us about the stories and the 50 stories idea.
Yes. So not to celebrate again, that's the wrong word really, but to mark the 50th year of the Haven this year. So we were founded in 73 by Colin Brown and Honor Pringle, who worked in probation actually. And it's funny because they started the Haven with... It was like, well, the stories vary. It was either £5 or £10. Either way, not a lot of money.
No.
So that's an interesting one in itself. So we're collecting 50 stories from the past 50 years from people who've either accessed support from us or volunteered for us or worked with us. We just want to share, we want to share those stories to sort of help women and children who are being subjected to abuse right now to see that there is a way out, and it might seem impossible, but it's not. And obviously to encourage volunteers and to encourage other people to work for us, of course, as well. So we've spoken to some absolutely wonderful people, including a lady called Wendy, who accessed support from us about 20 years ago now. She fled abuse with her children, came to Wolverhampton with nothing. She lived in one of our refuges. And she said that, you know, in her words, her life was saved at that point. And then 20 years later, she walked a marathon around West Park, obviously in the city, to raise money for us. And it blew us away, that story, completely. And we've actually got some support from Porsche in Wolverhampton to create, some animated versions of the stories just
fantastic.
It's wonderful. We're so grateful to them. That story is just wonderful. And obviously we want stories big and small. It doesn't have to be such a grand story like that, but that was kind of the first one that we collected. So and it's important to say that stories can be told anonymously, because we recognize that a lot of people won't be in a position to say, my name is, this is what happened to me, understandably, for various reasons, whether emotional or, you know, whether they're safety reasons. So please do get in touch, and we can tell your story anonymously. We can't underestimate how important these stories are to sort of encouraging other women and children to come forward and access support. And people can do that in various ways. The best way is to probably go to our website, which is havenrefuge.org.uk, and search for 50 stories. And there's just like a little contact form. So if anyone wants to get in touch, that would be wonderful. We're waiting. Waiting patiently.
Now, as it is the 50th anniversary, you've got a number of fundraising events on the way as well. Tell us about those.
Yes. We're very excited about those. Our fundraising team is amazing. I don't know how they do it, but they do it. They do a wonderful job. So we've got three, obviously various events throughout the year, but three kind of, you know, big events. And the first one being our skydive challenge. So we're looking for 50 people to do a skydive. I think that's going to be taking place in Nottingham, and that will be the 10th to the 11th of June. So yes, definitely one for thrill seekers and not for the faint-hearted. But again, you know, something that you'll never forget. So
absolutely.
Please do, if you fancy a thrill, please do come forward for that. The best way to look at those is to go on our website and look at the events page. Secondly, we've got the Three Peaks Challenge. So that's the 8th to the 9th of July. Again, you know, that's certainly one for getting your walking boots on. And then an event for someone who perhaps is more about the glitz and glamour. We've got the 50th anniversary ball on the 6th of October.
Oh, that sounds nice.
That sounds a lot more relaxing than the other two. So if you're not a massive thrill seeker, that's the one to go for, I would say.
That's Alex Spencer of the Haven Refuge in Wolverhampton. Yeah, I'm definitely not a thrill seeker. If you want to know about any of those events, then do go to havenrefuge.org and then you'll find all the events there. And also the links are in the show notes for this podcast. And that's it for this week. And if you've got any stories or news, you can email me, chris@wcrfm.com. And I look forward to you joining me next time on the Chris Allen Podcast.